is a let me tell you a little bit about myself first, and that'll tell you a little bit about evangelism where you live. I grew up in the state of Illinois. Even though I live in Texas now, and the people think that I'm a Texan, I am not a Texan. I am an Illinois dude and have been in ministry in different parts of the country, in Maryland, Virginia, and actually moved here from the great state of Colorado, and have been doing a variety of different things. I actually started out in ministry in youth ministry, and then went up through a variety of different things, became a educational ministry, became an associate pastor, and in Colorado had that responsibility as we were growing our church out there. And came here 14 years ago with the responsibility of helping churches locally, and then that ended up with being churches across the U.S. With my different responsibilities that I was trying to handle here. I'm one of the few people out, and this will tell you why I am 55 and a little bit strange. I'm one of the few people out in the world that was a part of Willow before Willow was Willow. Was actually going to the old youth group. I went a couple times. I actually got credit for going from a college that I was getting ready to graduate from. If I would go, I would get extra credit. And because I could always use extra credit, I went. And, Willow became Willow right before my eyes. And so living outside the lines, doing church a little bit differently, has just been a part of who I am and who I have been in ministry. So if something is working well in a local church today, I typically say as a consultant, so what are you going to do tomorrow? So that'll probably tell you enough about me, because I constantly am trying to help keep churches connected to the society and the culture that God placed them in. So the first one that I'd like to ask you is, I've got some questions up front. Here's the number one question. What do you and your people associate with and think about? Where do you put your mind most of the time? Is it with sports, like mine tends to drift a great deal of the time? Is it evangelism, which my heart beats faster than even the sports does? But not only you, but your people. Where are they associated? What just makes their heart beat quick and that makes them feel good? Another question. How do you see the need for your church? Well, yes, it's what God kind of put together for you to do at this time of your life, but what's the need of that in your community? What, and this is what I've been known for, what different thing are you doing for God that stands out so it is a ministry that is not being done in your community by any other church, by any other individual? God made us all different, and if you really knew me well, you would be grateful to know that there's not somebody else out there like me. But how do you see the need for your church? What is that? The next question. How can your church create a missional
environment?
environment? How can you all do that? What's different about your church to help you all step up one step to become the church that God wants you all to become, to be that missional environment that He asked at one time for you to go after, to be? This one jumped up on your page, but how has God led your church to engage your community? What is it about your church, and maybe even a small group, because you're getting ready to hear a great deal about small groups. What is it about your church that stands up, that's a little bit different, why he has you existing, and it is to meet what needs in your community? My key question in my book was this: why, after training tens of thousands of church members like I have to share their faith on stewardship, on the gospel, that the results are so low and they were continuing to decline? How come that? Particularly in the U.S., how come that is actually happening? I did something a little bit scary and started looking at the evangelical numbers in Europe, and I started seeing us following them 40 years behind, and then I looked at where they stand, and only 10% of the population in Europe are Christ followers, and I started seeing numbers in the U.S., authentic numbers in the U.S., going that way, and that scared me to death. And I've tried, when I was in a local church and now as an outside consultant, I tried to stand up and say, folks, we just can't go that way. We've got to understand that churches in the U.S. are disconnecting very similarly to how the churches in Europe, Great Britain, have done, and look at their results. Look at what's happened there. So, servant evangelism is what I locked onto. There has to be a different way. There has to be a better way. And so I did something that I think I have not ever done in ministry. I sat down and opened up the Bible and looked at the New Testament and started, and just had the one question in my mind as I was reading it. Here's the question: what does God really want me and our church to do? What is the bottom line? And I looked at it and go, wow, we've got so many things over this that you're getting ready to, I hit the wrong one. That's the return. And I can't go forward. I came back to this. Finally got it to work right. The Great Commandment, or is it the Great Commission? And I'm one of the people on planet Earth, a Christ follower, that thinks it's very difficult to have two number ones. One of them has to be 1A, 1B, and then absolutely everything else is down the list before you move on into it at all, like 20 or 30 before anything gets on a list. But what is it? Is it the Great Commandment, or is it the Great Commission? Or do they absolutely positively have to work together? Is that not what we are to be about, and we ought to be helping our people to be about? That is our bottom line, and absolutely positively what I think God's going to hold us accountable for when we actually lock eyes with him down the road a little. Then I also looked at Matthew 5, 13 through 17, where we're called the salt of the earth. And if you remember that, but it's not lost its saltiness, but can it be made salty again? It is not. It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out. And a lot of times we have people in our church that really think that we are not the salt of the earth. For whatever reason, I will accept a lot of the criticism of my lack of leadership for the end result that I have produced. but we have not produced what we need to do, absolutely, positively need to do. As leaders, one of the things in the responsibility God is holding me responsible for, and I, being a consultant, I think he's holding you accountable for also, is getting the greats right, holding them up as 1A, 1B, and holding up Jesus' word in Matthew 5, where he's talking about you are the salt of the earth. That's our responsibility. That's who we're supposed to be. The problem is, when we look through the folks in our churches, we very rarely do we see very many people that look that way. And a lot of it is as a result of my fault, because I'm probably older than most of you all, and the lack of leadership and doing what needs to be done that way within the local churches that I've served in. So we actually have barriers that we have to do. And that was the one with the Matthew 5. I want you to just have a second before we move on to actually the barriers. Okay, here we go. We're going to journey through these barriers. One of the barriers is time. Time. There's 24 hours in a day. That's all we have. And one of the things that I did before I came to be a consultant 14 years ago is a friend started speculating with me, can we actually put on paper, you know, actual numbers of time that we are operating our church, you know, through, and, you know, just making it work? Can we get a very close guesstimate of how and what we need to do in order to do that? So, we came up with the idea of putting down your weekly attendance, putting that down, and take that times the number of hours that those people would typically give the church for all the things that they're involved in the church. And then, that is the total amount of hours that you have to operate your church. Then, guess what? Subtract off your Sunday morning attendance, subtract off if they're in small groups, subtract off because you probably included the children. So their attendance in the children's programs while moms and dads were in a worship service, subtract all of that off, and then you'll come up with what you have to operate your church with. And that's a lot smaller than what most pastors that I've consulted with have ever thought. Most of them think that they have a lot more hours to operate people's lives with, and in our society, in our culture, we don't, and then you throw on top of that, we're not utilizing the hours that the people are willing to give us for the best way to bring glory and honor to God. So, take the time, do a little math, and see what that gives you as far as operational time that the church is needs to be operated by and through. Another one is church programs. All the different church programs eat up people's time. One of the things that I found, and is actually a core part of book number two that both Gene and I are working on, is that a church probably only needs to do two things, and that's worship in small groups, and then everything else that happens is a result of worship and small groups utilizing an event or program to tie people in to one of those. So would you do, let me say it this way, would you do a Christmas program to try to attract people? Yes. But what are you trying to utilize that for? Are you trying to get the people just in your worship service? Are you trying to move them into a small group? And maybe you're painting schools this summer, like our church is. And Why are you doing that? Well, one of the key reasons, and you know, we're trying to help our churches out, and it gives us connection opportunities with people in those churches that we're painting. But on top of that, community members are invited to come in and paint with our members, and it's surprising how many of those people end up connected to one of our small groups. So what do you do? We do painting to help our small groups reach out to people who are far from God. Church programs do not match the church. As a consultant, this I saw way too often. A church does things and is doing things simply because the church is expected to, either by the denomination or because of history. And the current church and who they are trying to become because of God's leadership, it doesn't match. It's not the same. So an area that needs to be at least addressed. Programs make it easier to, but our faith in efforts instead of God. And I know what it's like from being out there trying to start a new program for my church, and I know what that was. It took my focus off trying to connect people to God. It was just to try to get them in a program, and that's easy. And if there's somebody in the United States that'll lift up their hand and say that they were the country's worst at that, I would be the first to do that. But now, after consulting with churches the number of years I have, I see that, and I go, why did I teach people by what I did? And it needs to stop. Becomes the tail that wags the dog. Programs become the tail that wags the dog. A church program will stand up and move itself up to the same level as, as maybe a Sunday morning worship service in a lot of your people's minds. Maybe even bigger than a Sunday morning worship service. And in those types of churches, definitely more important than a small group. So when you have a bunch of church programs, yes, somebody loves it, and yes, somebody thinks that is the key within the life of your church, but it typically is a very small number of people. One of the things that I did that is not laid out in the book that has been written is I started consulting with the church, and I started asking them about all the different programming events, everything that they were doing as a church, and give me a list of it. When they gave me a list of it, they were all just absolutely proud. Their list, 95 different things. Let me tell you what had happened with the church prior to that over the last 2 years. They were running 500, and they were down to 150, and a year after that, they were down to 30. So it's not about the number of different things that you're doing, unless it's something that a small group wants to lift up and do. barriers of underdeveloped and spiritual gifts, passion and spiritual gifts. That's another one of the areas that we tend to just mess up also. I'm not sure why that got up there so quick. You have any idea?
Let's go back.
Had a problem? Yeah. Well, that didn't do it. That went back.
I'll go forward.
Yeah, but that's, I'm not getting what I was getting ready. So I'm sorry it's not up on the screen. Somehow I lost this one screen that you were getting ready to see. These things become the tail that wags the dog. All of these programs tend to wag the dog within the life of the church. can give the church a false sense of success because you keep a program going another year and you get the leaders in the leadership roles and people still attend even though it's down 10%, 5%, it gives the church a false sense of success. Tends to make it difficult to honor a person's spiritual gifts and their passion. I can't tell you how often when I was in doing it in the local church that I got people to do things that were outside their spiritual gift mix and outside the passion that God was placing in them to do just to keep a certain program going within the life of their church. And that hurt them. And now I feel just upset about that. Creates an unstable foundation for church leadership. That's just the bottom line. It creates that unstable foundation for church leadership. The next one, removing a program traditional creates conflict. It just creates conflict within the life of your church. I can tell you all about creating conflict in the life of the church, but one of the crazy things that I found is that if you go through that and actually do that, yes, you will lose some people, but at the same time, you will get people as a result of the tweaks and the changes. And the last one is your programming squelches the creativity of your people and your volunteers, your small groups, not being able to do maybe what God is actually leading them to do. Now we're to the screen that you have before you, barriers of underdeveloped passion and spiritual gifts. What are yours? What is your church's? What could they be? A barrier of church culture and control. Well, we have those, but that's a barrier that needs to be addressed as a church is trying to reposition itself to handle the culture of 2010, 2015. The basic problem that I see with a lot of churches is that we've stuck with a culture that reached people back in the 1940s, the late 40s, and the 50s and the 60s, and we've actually made very few changes to connect with actually what is going on in our culture today. Community-based servant evangelism, I think, is really a key for us as leaders within our churches to be able to help our church and to be able to fulfill what God is wanting us to fulfill. Here's a quote that I put in the book. We need to stop inviting people to Christian events as our only a form of outreach. Instead, start inviting people to spend time where they really are. There is a choice to be made there. We can either try to bring a person into our setting, however uncomfortable that may feel for you, or we may spend time with an individual in their setting and conform and deal with their sacrifice and help them. And most of the time, we take a step forward before they are really ready to take a step forward. In our world today, there are many churches, and I put the numbers 1 through 10 up there. There's many different churches, and there's many different things that everybody is trying to do within the church and focus it. Now, number 1 could be youth ministry. Number 2, children's ministry. Number 3, preschool ministry. Number 4 can be ministry to adults. Number 5 could be ministry to, well, let's say senior adults. Number 6 is your music ministry. 7, you can go on. That is a much longer list than 1 through 10. But a church, I think, that God is wanting us to have in our world today is, I'm going to go back, is a single one, just one thing, a community-based servant evangelism church that basically does two things, worship and small groups, and that's it. So how do you do small groups? How do you get small groups going? Because most churches have tried small groups, and they have not necessarily been successful, or they are still totally within the Sunday school structure, and that can even be tweaked to look more like what they were like back in the 1940s when Sunday school structure was actually working well and fulfilling that responsibility. And a lot of that had to come as a responsibility and a fulfillment after World War II, but that could still be done today. So what needs to be done? Pray and read your Bible. That sounds so basic, but you know, one of the things that really changed me a lot was hearing a couple different key leaders make a statement to me that they start praying at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they may stop by 7. They eat breakfast, they get to the office, and they get to the office, and then they look and take care of a couple's responsibility, and then they'll get with secretaries and staff, and then they'll pray another hour, 2 hours, and then I started adding up the hours that they were praying, and I came up with 6 to 8 that they were, you know, in communication with God, and I thought, oh my gosh, how do they get everything done? So I moved that up in my life from 15 minutes, 20 minutes, you know, on a big day, 30 minutes. I actually moved that up to 1 hour to 2 hours, and wow, were the decisions that I made better? Yes. Did I understand what God was trying to lead us to do? Absolutely, positively. So, the prayer time that you invest, and let me also say this with that, one of the things that I learned is I could request and fill 2 hours up with just requests from me, but I started several years ago with just keeping my mouth shut in prayer time and listening to Him direct me, guide me, and what I need to do next, what decision that I need to make. Who might I need to call? Just a variety of different things. And then the Bible. I was spending some time in the Bible every day, but not enough, far from what I needed to be doing. And when I cranked that up to over 1 hour and then 2, you know, decisions were easier to be made. It was just remarkable how easy work became because I prayed and I spent time in the Bible, and I actually got things done quicker than what I was getting done before I raised those up in my life and ministry. A second thing, church leadership must own the mission of love God and love others as the key. And if that is to be done, then that's got to be held out as the number one responsibility of yours and of the church. And the decisions are made around that. And I can tell you that I can forecast you and your church are going to be facing some difficult situations. Making all the decisions that need to be made by the loving God and loving others is the top priority, instead of keeping so-and-so happy because they've always done such-and-such, and we're a church in a community which has always done this, but now we don't see any results, and what will the community think? There's a variety of different things as a consultant that I've been hit with that way, And that's why I've said, own this, own it, that this is what you are about. It's simple. Love God, love others. Third, must be totally supported by the senior pastor or lead pastor. I can't tell you how many times I've done things in a church that the senior pastor and or lead pastor might not have necessarily, you know, they say one thing, they act one way, but then when it really comes down to it, they're really not totally there. And this is important. And that's, again, I'm going to bring back point number one. You have to be sold on changing your church. So spending time praying to God and spending a lot of time listening to God is absolutely, positively the number one responsibility of a pastor's in leading their local church. So it must be totally supported by you. Enlist top key church influencers. That almost kind of goes without a whole lot of other, but you need to enlist them and put them in the game. And that's a one-on-one. It's not an announcement from the church floor, and it's not an email, and it's not a note. It is a one-on-one. Enlist a champion of trying to make this change. And I'm talking about a key lay leader. I'm not talking about somebody to run evangelism where you live or this, you know, church champion just being a, you know, somebody who doesn't have a lot of support, but you need to enlist them. The next one is list that leadership team, people who have bought in on this, that we do basically and only what God is wanting us to do, and we're going to funnel that through worship and small groups. Design a plan. How are you going to implement this? Every church is different. Every church's plan, therefore, has to be different. And that's why, again, I put number one in there. Pray. You have to pray. That is the only way that you're going to be able to design a plan that is going to work. Because I can tell you from trying to, and even successfully helping churches transcend, the only way and the only way that we were responsible was the amount of time we spent in prayer and that the amount of time that we were able to get the key leaders in the life of the church to pray. Provide training. A lot of people don't get it because what's important for your church today is not necessarily what your church needs to be responsible for tomorrow. So training's going to be needed. And do you get that through an area event, or do you put that in your church only? But they're going to need some training. Cast the vision to your church, and you might think, oh, that needs to be number one. I'm one in our culture today. You cast the vision to the church too early. You create conflict. You create confusion. And you do not have it matching exactly what God wants you to do in your local church. Leadership is a spiritual gift. You can see it through and throughout the New Testament. And this plan has eight previous things that are in place first, making sure that this is exactly what God is wanting your church to be about, and then you lay it out there. Am I saying that there won't be any tweaks and changes once you get into step nine? No. But you play step nine early. I can tell you that as a consultant with churches, that was a major reason why I had to go in and help a church handle conflict. Number 10, implement the plan. And that could take 6 months, could take three, could take a year. But it does take some time. Evaluate all aspects and correct. So therefore, That's critical. That's important that you do spend the time that's necessary to evaluate what's going on. Were you absolutely positively in tune with what God was wanting you to do as leaders and with your church, or does it need tweaked? And I have worked with several churches this way, and the changes that were made, all of them had some tweaks as far as step 11 goes, but all of them are a lot better down the road since they are now focused on less things, and they are the things that God absolutely positively wanted them to do through worship and through their small group ministry. Mm-hmm. So,
now, Steve, a question that has come in is, can you give us in a nutshell a description or definition of community-based service evangelism? I've had the privilege of reading your book, and so I know what you're talking about, but some of our audience participants have not yet had the chance to read the book, and so just what CBSE is still a new idea. So if you can kind of summarize that for us in a nutshell or two, I think that would be helpful.
Okay, trying to keep that very short. God has your church in a certain community that has a certain culture. And what, as a consultant, what I have found is a lot of churches that exist in our country do not have any attachment to their culture at all.
Or a way that I hear that in my seminars is, how can my church connect with my community? There is an underguiding question that there's a disconnect between the church culture and the surrounding culture of the community. And so people are asking you and me as consultants, what can my church do to connect with the neighborhood?
Right.
And so how does community-based servant evangelism help that?
Well, I mean...
And remember, we're still defining it here. How would you, in terms of meeting that need, how does what is community-based servant evangelism, and how does that meet that need?
Well, I mean, every church, every one of us as Christ followers are in a certain location because we felt God's direction to be there. And one of the reasons that he decided to move us to a certain location was that the spiritual gifts that we have, that he gave us and he empowered us with, are the gift mix that needs to be deployed through that local church that we're at in that community. And there is a need in that community that matches all of that together, or you being in that church, it didn't match exactly what God was wanting at that time. And that sounds kind of rough, but if I had not had a certain experience to where I had gone to a church and it was not exactly what God wanted me to do, and it was more of a desire to live in a certain place, in a location, and I can tell you quickly that at the end of the first day when I got home, I told my wife, this is a mistake. And that was not a Sunday. That was just a regular old Monday. That this is not going to be good. And I almost left the ministry because of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing that stuck out in my mind, there is the story of Bruce, the Canadian who loved hockey but lives in Texas. There in your story, kind of in the introduction in your book. Was that your story or was that Gene's story?
I think that was Gene's.
Okay. Well, I think it would provide an excellent example, and so I'll kind of share it in terms of what this might look like. Bruce was the type of guy who had a passion for ice hockey, but there he was living in Texas. And eventually, because of his passion and his gifts, he became a coach in the local hockey team. He began to coach a local hockey team as his as kind of a way to act out his passion. And then, as he was coaching, he began to get to know the parents. He began to get to know the lives of the kids that he was coaching. But occasionally it would present a conflict where he couldn't go to church on Sunday morning because he was running a hockey game. And so then he met with his pastor to kind of find out, well, you know, there's a conflict value here. And in that particular church, the pastor gave Bruce permission to, you know, obviously to keep coaching. But then also Bruce felt the need maybe to start a chapel for his players and parents, to launch a little chapel prior to the hockey game that had nothing to do with performance or favoritism or anything like that, but just an optional activity for those who wanted it. And to Bruce's amazement, more than half the family started coming to this hockey chapel. And then out of that, as more relationships were developed, and then Bruce met with some other hockey coaches up in Canada, and they started doing chapels for their teams as well. And eventually people came to know, some people in Bruce's ministry came to know Christ as their Savior and Lord. But the idea of giving Bruce permission to launch a ministry that was in the community, that was connected with his passion, connected with his gifts, as opposed to spending all the man hours running committee meetings and running programs and things like that. So I think that may provide an example. And you may have one of your own as well that would kind of help demonstrate what community-based servant evangelism might actually look like in the local church.
Yeah, I can give you one, and this one is outside the lines for a guy connected with Baptist dudes, but six of us got together on a Friday night and started playing cards like once a month, and then all of a sudden it hit me, and we were trying to move the church from Sunday school into small groups, and then it hit me, I'm just going to take a small group, quote, lesson this week when we're doing dinner together, because we play cards from 7 to 8, do dinner, and then from 9 to 12 we'd keep playing and then leave. I'm gonna take a little Bible study. I'm gonna put that in there, and I'm gonna see what happens. So I did that twice, and then the other people started thinking, I've got some people who are far from God that would go through this. Let's try this. So we started doing that, and then we had to put it in multi-houses. And 18 months later, there were 42 people that have come through that style, and they had a party for us before we moved to Texas, and I was just knocked over, even being in the leadership of the local church, I was knocked over because more than 20 of those people found Christ as a result of playing cards. And Baptists aren't supposed to play cards. So, you know, it's one of those things that I never, ever, never thought that something like that would ever work. And it was just absolutely phenomenal how God directed me to do something like that and how easy it was for me to hand that kind of style over to other people that we reached as a result of it, and how it changed the numerical size of heaven.
Okay. Now, here's another question that came in, but I think it may kind of give an idea as to how community-based servant evangelism can kind of connect in with an existing program in the church. One of our audience members from Wisconsin kind of chimed in that they have a food pantry that feeds on average 1,500 to 2,000 individuals each month, being the county's largest food pantry resource. With that program and all the administrative efforts that it takes to kind of run that particular program, how can this philosophy of ministry, of community-based servant evangelism, be applied to that program that is very vital to the need of that local community?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I found out when I was in charge, as far as a staff member at a local church in charge of small group ministry, is God often had that question answered because I kind of threw that out to some of the small group leaders, and they came back and told me God was working on us to get involved with something, and when I threw this out to the rest of the people in our group, they were all over it, And then one of the things that floored me about that was, the result was a lot of those people were brought into the kingdom and brought into that small group that went in to help out.
Mm-hmm. Now, so, one of the thoughts that I got reading your book is that in a community-based situation where you're out serving the needs of the community, it seems like there is an intentionality in looking for conversational opportunities as well as responding to the conversational opportunities that come your way. It's not simply doing acts of service, even if they're done in Jesus' name. There's acts of service that are where your motives are explained, where there is some intentionality in trying to communicate the gospel without hindering the work of the ministry, the work of that particular service project. I think Rotarians can give food to the can run a food bank. The Lions Club can be involved in clean water projects. The dental societies can do free dental cleanings for the neighborhood, just like the church can do all those things. But there's something different, I think, about the church doing it, and correct me if I didn't get this right in your book, but it seems like what the difference that the church can make is that in the conversational opportunities and in the relationship-building pieces that happen in that service project, there's the opportunity to talk about faith.
Oh, absolutely. And the numerical size of heaven will change.
And so, maybe for this pastor who kind of runs a food bank, maybe there is an encouragement to think, how can we talk about our faith while we are meeting the needs of our community? How can our church members talk more about the activity of God in their life as they are distributing food bags? How can the members of our church be more intentional in praying with those who would like to receive prayer, who come to the food bank and receive? Is that kind of what I think you're getting at with community-based servant evangelism? Is
absolutely
serving a practical need, but yet there's evangelism involved.
Yeah, and it's so easy then to connect them into the small group that's working together out there, because they start appreciating those people, know those people well, and if a small group really does love God, they start loving that person, and they do not ever want to face the possibility of that person spending eternity separated from them and the Father.
And because there's a love that comes out of that, and indeed
absolutely,
a connection point. Now, I've taken the screen back because I recognize that we're kind of running low on our time here, and so I just want to give folks a couple of wrap-up things before our committed hour is done. And then, Steve, I guess if you've got a couple of minutes, we can stick around and continue to do some Q&A for those who would like.
Okay.
All right. And when the webinar is over, folks, you'll receive an email from me about an hour from now that will contain a link to Steve's book called Evangelism Where You Live, Engaging Your Community. You can order a copy off of it. You can order a copy of it off Amazon. I've read the whole thing two or three times, underlined it, marked it up, and I think that some of the chapters in there, I think you will find absolutely brilliant. As I was reading it, there were a couple of times when I went, no, duh, why didn't I think of this? Because some of it is just absolutely brilliant in there. So that will be there. Also, you'll receive a little link to a little four-question survey in terms of how was our time this afternoon. And then in the future, you'll be getting my monthly newsletter from evangelismcoach.org. Also in that email, you will get a link back to the website that will have a resource page where you can download this presentation. You can download or rather watch a replay. It'll be a link that you can use to send to other people if you'd like them to be aware of how you've just spent the last hour so that they can see the webinar themselves. Now, all that will come to you sometime within the next hour or so by email. And then upcoming here at evangelismcoach.org, we've got a couple other webinars in the future. The first one is going to be scheduled. First one is scheduled for about 2 weeks from now, where I will be talking about First Impressions Ministry. Just as much as personal evangelism is sought after material on my website, so also is information about improving your first impressions. that's welcoming people, shaking their hands, that's speaking to them when they walk in the door. And so I've written a book about that. It's on welcomechurchvisitors.com. That you can go ahead and purchase that and download it if you wish, but I'll be doing a webinar here in about 2 weeks on some of that material. And I'm working on upcoming